League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Sweat the technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So we got some Astro injury news.
I see it.
Oh, you saw it. Another Astro has landed on the I always want to say IR, but that's hateful, I guess. Another Astro has landed on the IL. And I think this might make people happy.
Yeah.
You can't spell Lance without IL, sort of. Lance McCullers has been placed on the 15-day IL due to a right finger blister. To take his place on the active roster, the Astros have recalled Nick Hernandez, go Cougs, from AAA Sugarland. So, second stint now for Lance McCullers on the IL since returning from a two-and-a-half-year stay.
Probably
on the
was
IL.
The middle finger.
You think so? It probably is.
The way people think right now. Yep, I sure do.
I mean, the most common blister fingers for pitchers are usually the index in the middle. And with as much skin as he has, if I had to guess, I think it is the inside of his middle finger.
Yep.
We're nuts. We're breaking down the finger, the side of the finger.
From the inside looking out, the middle finger. Yep.
Yeah. I'm not wishing injury on a player, but
and look, if there was ever a time to hit the injured list, it would be now.
Yeah, it really would. And the Astros also need a little bit of coverage, too, because of Lance. Their bullpen's kind of upside down. It's been very taxed, very, very taxed, four games after the All-Star break. So this, you get another pitcher in here. I wouldn't be shocked. They haven't announced a starter for tomorrow's game yet. At least I haven't seen it. It wouldn't shock me if they call up Costanza again and give him the start. That way you can kind of reset your pitching staff a little bit and get everybody back, rested or at least as rested as possible. So I could see that. They haven't announced a starter for tomorrow, have they?
Not that I've seen.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. Wouldn't shock me if they go with either
Gusto.
No, I think Gusto's been used.
No, that's right, because he pitched back-to-back innings.
So I think, they could go Brandon Walter, right? Because Brandon Walter pitched the first game from the break, which was Friday. So you'd have Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, normal rest pitching on Wednesday. And then maybe you could do Jason Alexander on Thursday. Yeah, maybe that's the play. Or you could flip-flop them and go Alexander Wednesday and then Walter on Thursday. Because they pitched on the same day. Alexander pitched in Sugarland. I can't remember if he pitched Friday or Saturday. I want to say Alexander pitched the same day as Walter. I'll have to double-check that. But I bet you Walter and Alexander in some order, not necessarily that one, but in some order we'll have Wednesday and Thursday.
I would definitely think Walter is in that mix for sure. I didn't think about bringing Alexander back, but yeah, now it makes sense.
Because, McCullers started the Saturday after Walter started on Friday. And, they don't want to bump guys up right now. You want to bump up Hunter Brown? Course not. So somebody's making a spot start either tomorrow or Thursday. And it's going to be Jason Alexander. I just don't know which day he'll go.
Yeah, no, that sounds right.
I'm going to double check when Jason Alexander pitched because I think he pitched on. I'm an idiot. I put Jason Alexander in Google. What do you think came up whenever
Kramer.
I put Jason?
Costanza.
Of course, Costanza came up. No, he's been pitching pretty good in AAA too. Alexander and had that spot start where he pitched really well too. But
he's the anti blue ball.
He's got a 1.55 ERA. In AAA this year, Jason Alexander.
I mean, I've never seen a guy that was hyped up more that fell off the planet quicker than Blue Ball after one start in the major leagues, and then he goes back to Sugarland and he sucks.
Yeah. His last start or two has been better, but not anything to write home about. Alexander pitched on the 18th. What day was the 18th? The 18th was last Friday, so I was right. So Walter and Alexander both pitched last Friday. So I would actually go Alexander and give Walter an extra day rest.
Yeah, I would see that.
Why not? You want to preserve his arm a little bit. The dude's been nails for you.
He's obviously more important for you for the long haul than Jason Alexander. So, yeah.
If you had to press – and tomorrow's a day game, too. So, it's not even a full day rest, I mean, not that tomorrow's his rest day, but pitching midday as opposed to evening, a little bit shorter rest than the last time he pitched. I would go Alexander tomorrow and Walter on Thursday.
Agreed.
Cool. We got that figured out. All right, yeah. CJ Stroud. Up and down year two. Depends on who you ask. Obviously, the protection was poor. Was running for his life. Pressure rate was high. You know, was Bobby Slowick incompetent? People think that's what the streets are saying. So I've heard a lot of people talk about Kaylee's offense. I've heard a lot of these players, like Texans Radio interviewed like 100 players, and they've been like airing them in the lead up to training camp. And they ask them all, of course, like, hey, what does Nick Kaylee's offense look like? Because it's good information. Everything that I hear is like that it's – I don't want to use the word complex, but they give their receivers a lot of options to kind of break off their routes depending on what the defensive look is. The coverage obviously the coverage protections that's going to have to improve a great deal from where it was last year too, because it's another area where it might fall on CJ Stroud. I think the biggest area where CJ Stroud's going to have to be good this season is decision making and being able to read what is happening. Because if you have a lot of option routes and you have a lot of receivers that can run different routes based on what the defensive look is and then how the defense is playing post snap, CJ Stroud's going to have a very high level of decision making to make this offense go. I think that's the most critical attribute for CJ Stroud in year three.
I think you're probably right, but I think that what I like and take away from most of this when they do talk to the majority of the players they've talked to so far and ask them about the offense is that we didn't know just how seemingly dysfunctional and maybe generic Slowick was.
Yep.
And that now they have a real offensive system to run with a guy that's probably better suited to run it. So my takeaway through all the quotes and the interviews that I've seen is the fact that we didn't know what we didn't know about Bobby Slowick, but we sure do know that they're a step up and have gone a grade up in what they're doing now with Kaylee, and that's exciting.
Yeah. I it's exciting if it all clicks. And I think it's going to be difficult for it to click early because the chemistry is going to have to be very good. Everybody's going to have to be on the same page. This is everybody's first year in the offense. Like, it wouldn't shock me if the offense starts kind of slow and then progressively gets better. But if there was one thing, like if you could pick one attribute, one skill, one area where CJ Stroud excels this year, and then that gives you the best chance to win football games, obviously. Like, I trust that he can make every throw. I trust that he has a strong enough arm. I trust that he can run the ball a little bit if necessary. His decision-making in a new offense, in an offense that allows their receivers and skill players freedom to kind of do their own thing based on the look they're getting, CJ Stroud's going to have to be in the mind of every single one of his skill guys.
He is, but I think that the one reason why I have confidence in all of this kind of working and everybody being on the same page is he is a footballaholic. He's an X's and O's guy, and this is what he's wanted. I mean, he's hinted and indicated that he wants more. He wants the ability to be the guy that, you know, calls the signals at the line and the audibles and, you know, and reads the play and then does all the things that he's now going to have more ability to do with a guy that's better suited to kind of get him ready to do it. That's why I think, because I think one of the things that I would throw into what you said, too, is his unbelievable ability with touch to feather the ball in wherever it needs to go as well. So his skill set is so above average, and the fact that this is what he wants. This is a football junkie getting his fill. Mm-hmm. That's why I have confidence that he's going to be able to do it.
I do, too. But it's the one area in a new offense where it's more of an unknown. Because we've seen everything else. We know he has the capability of making every throw. We know he has the capability of, okay, third and three, I realize there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I can pick up the first down with my legs. In fact, he did it a little bit more than I was comfortable with last year. Like, I want him to stay in the pocket a little bit more. We don't know how well he's going to pick up this offense. In, like, NFL history, there's been quarterbacks that they're not great in specific offenses. Now, I think Kaylee, too, is going to cater his offense around Stroud's skills. But if you have a receiver that can do five different things based on a defense's look and then what they're doing post-snap, the chemistry and being on the same page is going to be critical. That's why I'm not going to overreact to what the offense looks like in the first four games, because it is a different offense. I think it can be a little complicated. They're going to try to make it simple, but it can be a little complicated. But for the Texans to reach their offensive potential, because I think the defense is going to excel. I think their defense is going to be really good.
Yep.
For them to reach their offensive potential, their chemistry is going to have to be great by the end of the year.
No, and this goes back to the conversation we were having before Kaylee was even in the picture, and we were talking about what if you lose Slowik to a head coaching job after you CJ really gets comfortable with the offense and the system and everything else, and then it's the Brady quote of you really don't have a firm grasp of the offense the first year that you get to all of it, to the point where you say to yourself, okay, well, it's going to take some time for CJ to really feel comfortable, but I believe that he is the guy for the job. He will do it. And like you said, maybe it won't happen overnight, and we're going to come out of the gates and look at this team after the first game or two and go, wow, what a difference. But I do feel it'll be noticeable from the jump whether they execute everything or not.
Yeah.
And I believe that CJ's smart enough, and with Kaylee being the guy that kind of works with him, that he's going to take a lot of what the defense gives him. We know that Deshaun was the guy that always wanted the SportsCenter moment and was hunting the bigger plays. Mm-hmm. And I think that you got the right two guys in terms of just take what the defense gives you, get the first down, move the chains. There'll be plenty of times to get the chunk plays.
I have a question for the both of y'all. If it comes out through the first couple weeks that the offense is a lot more like a spread offense that he had at Ohio State, do you think that that could help him, even if it is a more complex version?
So I have a hard time thinking Nick Kaylee runs spread.
Yeah, I don't think so either. He's been kind of known to be a guy that does the exact opposite.
But if he does, just to entertain the question.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, any system where CJ's already played in a similar situation is advantage CJ for sure, but you would think advantage Texans in the fact that he should excel in that type of system because he's run it before.
Yeah, I like their personnel for that, quite frankly, because I like their receiver room. So like I think that the roster kind of builds in perfectly with the spread offense and stuff. I think it would be helpful. Like I think that, you know, having the familiarity with it would be helpful. But I just have a very difficult time seeing Kaylee do that. Like he might go 11 personnel, have 3 receivers on the field, but is he ever going to go like 10 personnel and have 4 receivers on the field?
I don't think so.
Is he ever just going to go, you know, 4 or 5 wide? I doubt it. Like they're going to want to run the ball a lot. I think we see a lot of 12 personnel. I think we see a fullback at times.
See, that's where I was leaning. And that's why I know everybody hates this, but it is the pressing question and the number one topic on everybody's mind is,
yep,
the offensive line's got to block. Regardless, the offensive line's got to block. But if they can run block, I think that they will ride the run game a lot more early on while everybody is working out everything on the pass game, if they're capable of doing that. But if they can't run the football, that's where you might see a world of hurt, because now they're going to have to throw it,
yeah,
and do some things that I don't think that Kaylee's going to feel comfortable doing as frequently as they might have to.
Which makes, I mean, that's a pass rusher's dream too.
Yes,
like if you know the quarterback's dropping back every single play, and that's whenever
you pin your ears back and
exactly.
You go wreak havoc.
Off. Yep. The O-line and receivers outside of Collins suck. Okay, I might give you the offensive line. Like, that could very well suck. Like, the O-line could be bad. That wouldn't shock anybody. But to think that Christian Kirk sucks, to think that Jaden Higgins, who was the 34th pick of the draft, yep, sucks. I like Jalen Knoll. I wouldn't go with the receivers part of that. O-line, perhaps. Maybe even probably. Receivers outside of Collins, I'm not giving you that.
No, not at all. And I think that they, again, for what we don't know about the offensive line, and it remains to be seen, what we do know is that Christian Kirk is a more than capable second wide receiver. And the fact that they drafted two kids that look like that they have all the skill in the world, and they gave a full contract to the second round pick that tells you everything you need to know, that I think that they've got a lot of talent in that room this year, as opposed to in years past when we were thinking about the room at the start of the year looking like one of the worst rooms in the league. I think their receiver room's really solid.
Yeah, I do too. I like Kirk. I like Higgins.
I don't want to oversell it because with Kirk, health is always an issue. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like you should feel pretty confident that this receiver room is capable of getting done whatever Kaylee wants to get done.
See, I almost look at the third receiver as a combination of Kirk and Knoll, because like Kirk is the guy who's going to be productive when he's on the field. The injury concern is valid, which is where Knoll can just like kind of step in and be the same ish guy. Mm-hmm. Nico and Higgins, I think, have a chance to be pretty dang good. Total Dallas, Texans offense is a lot of youth and potential, means lots of mistakes too, especially with a first year OC, and especially with a first year OC that's going to allow a lot of freedom from his skill position guys. At what point do you think we'll know what type of offensive line we have?
I think probably the first quarter of the season. I would say about four or five games in.
Exactly what I was going to say. Like, I think you have to give it four games, maybe even more, with a new offensive.
Yeah.
With a new offensive scheme, a completely different offensive line. The protection, the coverages are going to be a lot different too. Stroud's going to be learning a new offense. Like, you might not know to like week six before my immediate answer.
And let's also take into consideration the fact that between now and the start of the regular season, we haven't solidified a whole lot of positions as to where everybody's going to be playing and who's going to be playing them.
They might have.
I think behind closed doors, but even to what I'm saying is behind closed doors going into camp, they might already have penciled guys in. That can change if they don't hold up their end of the bargain.
Oh, it's very fluid. Very fluid. I 100% agree with that. And then the another text, I finished watching The Quarterback on Netflix. I'm about halfway through myself. Those quarterbacks were trusted with three or four plays at the line. Not only that, but they're trusted with three or four plays at the line, and then their skill guys can do two or three different things. I'm wondering with Slowik if he gave CJ one play at the line and made him stick with it. If that was the case, Slowik should have gotten fired. I mean, a lot of people call Slowik incompetent, which is crazy after year one. There was also, like, Stroud didn't have the freedom to audible, so
that's,
I think it's possible that that was the case.
And then you factor in what you've heard about defenders that saw it every day in practice, and before we even get to the first true day of 11-on-11 in camp, they're saying it looks far more organized. It looks, you know, making all the comments they're making, which made you have more credence in the fact that a lot of people probably were telling the truth now that they weren't saying earlier about what Slowik was not doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, It's tough quarterback whenever it's a very complicated position. That documentary does a good job, too, of like how difficult it is to play the position, like what they have to know, the plays, what everybody's doing, what everybody could potentially like improvise into having multiple plays and then changing the play based on a defensive look. The defense is also trying to decoy what they're doing. Like the quarterback, it's intense. That's why it's so hard to evaluate, because you can get the highest, you know, the guy with the most skills, right? You can find the cannon arm that's super accurate, that can run, that can do it all. But if he's a mental midget, he has no chance. Mm-hmm. No chance.
Can you say that?
Oh. Mental midget?
Yeah. The M word.
I think so.
It's the M word, you know?
Mental? Yeah, my bad.
No, yeah, the other one. Yeah.
I think I can say that. I'm not sure. All right, I better go to break just to be safe.
Yeah.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Who in your mind is the biggest overrated, underrated team in the NFL? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Look, we're at the end of July. Back to school is going to be here before we know it. It's approaching the little kids and the big kids. And let me tell you, getting your first car is a life-changing experience. Maybe you're in the market for your kid that's approaching 16. The freedom, the open road, the new possibilities. You can drive to a job, for example. Put them into work. And for parents, a new driver means an extra hand to run errands or take siblings to school. And right now, Monument Chevrolet wants to help you get your new driver on the road. They have a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles. And guess what? They come with a 6-month, 6,000-mile limit, 60,000-mile limited warranty. Monument Chevrolet doesn't sell lemons, and they back that promise up with a guarantee. So check out Monument Chevrolet for fair prices, family values, the knowledge and experience that more than 500 years in business get you. Monument Chevrolet, the place that you can trust. Check out their inventory at monumentchevrolet.com or visit them in person, 225 and Beltway 8 at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
The Killer Bees, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6.
All aboard!
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Who are the biggest overrated, underrated teams in the NFL in your mind? 713-780-3776. Did y'all do any of these NFL Top 100 countdown things?
What do you mean?
The players, they were unveiling the Top 100. Did y'all do any of those last week?
We did the corners. We did on Thursday or Friday, we did the Sertan number one and Stingley number two.
So the NFL.com is doing like the unveiling of the top 100 players, and they're doing it from 100 to 1, and they're chipping away at it. I remember we started doing it the other day, but I couldn't remember how far we got. Anyways, the most recent player, the countdown is all the way down to number 67. Joe Mixon was on this list, by the way. Mm. A couple of quarterbacks have been on here. Like Dak Prescott was number 79. That was late last week, I think, whenever his release was out there. Christian McCaffrey at 73 was interesting to me. Like, if he's right, he might be 7, not 73.
But if he's not, is he even on the list?
No. Right? I mean availability is part of the grade.
Yeah.
Sam Darnold was 72. So they think highly of quarterbacks.
For 1 year.
Now you're gonna like today's quarterback that they came out with. Jordan Love, number 68. Now he dropped 34 spots. Yeah, he was at 34
like
last
a red
year.
Balloon.
68 for Jordan Love.
I think as much as you guys, and rightfully so, gave me a hard time about how much I was like standing on the fact that I didn't think he was as good as everybody thought he was and that the contract said he was. I think a lot of people are coming to my side now going, hey, look, from the youngest roster in the league to a ton of talent on that team, it's starting to get to be put up or shut up time for the kid that to prove that he actually can, guide a team.
Yeah. I think he's solid. Like, I think he's a top half of the NFL quarterback. You get a top half of the NFL quarterback, you have to pay him because what's the alternative? You're searching for a quarterback. Unless you can like bring one in immediately, kind of like what the Rams did with Stafford, where they moved on from Goff, brought in Stafford, won a Super Bowl. Now Goff's doing pretty good too. Malik Nabers was 67. That was the most recent one today. I feel like that's low. I'm a Malik Nabers lover.
He's really good, man.
I love Malik Nabers. Really good.
I mean, look, I think a lot of it is you can't criticize a guy for who he's got throwing him the football, but I just think that you put it in his direction, he's coming down with it more times than not. He is really good.
Yep. So that's 67. We'll let you know any other Texas. But if Jordan Love's on there, if Sam Darnold's on there, C.J. Stroud's going to be on there. Yeah, he's going to be top 100. All right. Who do you think are the most overrated and underrated teams going into the NFL this year with training camp here?
I think I'll start with underrated. To me, there's two teams that finished last in their division that I think have a chance to make the playoffs. And I think that one of them is a mainstay, and the other one is one that I can't stand that people tried to pump up a year early. But I think that with Ben Johnson, I think the Chicago Bears have a chance to make the playoffs. They've done everything in their power to literally put an entire team around their young quarterback and say, Caleb Williams, the time is now. And I think from a San Francisco perspective, we just talked about it with CMC. I mean, if McCaffrey's back, the fact that you've got a guy, whether you call him a game manager or not, you paid him finally, but Brock Purdy's a guy that's capable of running that offense with Shanahan, and if you've got the weaponry that they still have around them with Kittle and McCaffrey and some of the guys that they have, and their defense is still really damn good, I think that the Bears and the Niners could be the two teams from last year that finished last that have a legit chance to make the playoffs.
See, I think the Titans are underrated. I don't think they're going to win 10 games. They might not even have a winning record. But I think they're way better than a 3-14 team, and they finally have a real quarterback with potential. I think the Titans could easily win 7 games this year and be a very difficult team to beat week in, week out. I think the Raiders are going to be much improved too, but again, kind of the same vein as Tennessee. Like, I don't see them winning 10 games. I just see them being, a 7-8 win team, bigger improvement than what they were. Dallas intrigues me. I love CeeDee Lamb. I like the addition of George Pickens. Mm-hmm. Yes, they don't have a running game, but Dak Prescott's going to throw it 50 times. Now, they need to figure out this little Micah Parsons situation. But I think Dallas is a little bit underrated. And then San Fran, it's hard for me to call San Fran underrated because of all the injuries they had. So that's where I would go with underrated. Overrated? I think Pittsburgh's a little overrated. I don't think they're a 10-win team. I think they're an 8-9 win team. I think Denver's
overrated. That's target number one for me was I think Denver's going to get – there's going to be a harsh case of reality that slaps them in the face this year. I know that they're the darlings. I know everybody's, latching on to Peyton and Bo Nix and everything that they have going for them or had going for them a year ago. I think year two for them is going to be – kind of the opposite of what everybody's projecting. I think that they're gonna fall back.
Same. We're on the same page there. And then the other one for me is the Commanders. I think the Commanders
That's
are very
exactly
overrated.
Who I was thinking as well. I was like, look, I compare Jaden Daniels to what we saw in C.J. Stroud. In year two, when teams really get, a better feel for how to defend you and the way that you're going to have to adjust, and I know they're putting a lot of eggs in the basket of the offense to try and improve. Scary Terry's got a contract dispute that hasn't gotten solved yet. I just think that, again, that's another reality check. Not that they don't have a lot of talent, But one, that division is stacked because you just mentioned Dallas, and we know that the Eagles are going to be a perennial Super Bowl favorite. I don't know that the Giants have gotten a ton better, but I think the Giants are better. But I think that, you know, you got a tougher schedule too for Washington. I just don't see what a lot of people see about them being like a, you know, like a what do they call it, a sweetheart Super Bowl kind of team. I don't see that.
Yeah. Any others that jump out to you that we didn't mention?
Minnesota to me is one that I'll mention just simply because of the fact that with J.J. McCarthy, maybe he is the guy long term. I think he's going to take some lumps early on. As good of a coaching staff as he has and as much talent as he has around him, you're only as good as he can be. He wasn't a passing quarterback in college. He's coming off the injury. I don't believe in J.J. McCarthy short term. I don't think the Vikings are going to be as good as people think.
I've been talked into McCarthy. I told you yesterday, so I'm not putting him on my list. Do you think McCarthy, it's not his rookie year, but in his first year playing in the NFL, do you think he can be equal-ish to what Darnold was last year?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I think Sam Darnold is a better passer of the football at both stages of their career. I think that J.J. McCarthy's got to polish a lot in my opinion, from what I've seen, of his ability to make all those throws that we talk about you have to make in the NFL, where the windows are smaller and the gaps between the defender are smaller, that he's got to be better. I just think Sam Darnold was a better thrower of the quarterback last year than J.J. McCarthy will be this year.
Texas has overrated Cincinnati. Look, I don't. It's fine. I mean, they have a stars and scrubs
with
team.
Anybody, their defense sucks. That,
but the thing though is, like, if Burrow has a bad game, they have no chance to win.
That's
like
right.
Other teams in the NFL can survive. Like if CJ Stroud has a bad game, the Texans can win a game because their defense is very good. If Burrow plays mediocre, they have no shot. There were games last year where Burrow was elite and they lost.
Yeah, that's because their defense sucks.
Yeah, like I have no problem putting Cincinnati in the overrated
Hendrickson
category.
Just got in a car and drove to Florida.
I know. It's not a good situation. And like 90% of their money's tied up in three guys, and none of them are defenders. Underrated Giants.
I don't see it.
I think Dable's a good coach.
He is.
The quarterback situation.
I mean, in order to be a good coach, you got to have good personnel around you. They're trying. I
don't hate their skill. Like, I mean, you got Neighbors. I thought Tracy was fine. You know, a lot of people like Scatabo. I'm a little indifferent.
Yeah.
They just don't really have quarterback. But.
Now, Russ Dable, a year ago Dable was better than people thought.
Yeah, and early he was.
Right.
He kind of faded at the end. And then Dable also made Daniel Jones a pretty good quarterback that one year. So, I mean, Giants is kind of an interesting team to watch. I wouldn't put them in the underrated category. But interesting. Another texter said underrated Giants too. Overrated Chargers. That's going to make me Hannon mad. I like Harbaugh. Like, I don't like Harbaugh, but I like Harbaugh as a coach.
Yeah, I don't like him as a person. It's hard to bet against him as a coach.
Same. Their defense is good. Herbert's solid.
Would you consider Tampa underrated?
See, I don't know. They won double-digit games last year. Maybe because people
just don't believe in Baker. At a certain point, they think Mike Evans is too old, but they find a way.
1143, that's a funny text, but I'm not reading it. Key from L.A., overrated Buffalo Bills, underrated Atlanta Falcons, team to watch L.A. Rams. You were on the overrated Bills train yesterday.
I was.
Underrated Falcons. I mean, Penix.
Well, I mean, you believe in their quarterbacks. That's different.
I do in the regular season. I mean, that's he's unbelievable in the regular season. Falcons are interesting because, like, their defense is But they have some skill, like Bijan Robinson, Drake London would be one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL.
There's
Kyle
a lot
is
of
a major disappointment.
Again, it obviously is going to come down to Penix in a lot of ways. There's a lot of people that are buying stock in the Falcons.
Yeah, I think they're like a 500 team. I know that's not possible in the NFL. Well, I guess it is because you could tie.
You tie.
Broncos are way overrated. The soon-to-be Washington Commanders are underrated. I don't think Commanders are underrated.
I don't either. I think they're overhyped right now.
They're being pumped up.
Like
quite
I said,
a bit.
like a darling Super Bowl pick. Like if you're going like with the underdog Super Bowl pick, a lot of people are looking at Washington.
Yeah, I can't see it. Like, did they get blown out? Didn't they get blown out by Philly last year? How did they exit last year?
I don't think it was a blowout. I think it was a slugfest.
No, they got blown out in the NFC Championship game.
That's what I thought.
They got 50 hung up on them.
Okay. Well, there's that from me.
I can't remember their path though. Like I vaguely remember that they got hammered. Oh, they beat the Lions in a shootout. They squeaked by Tampa at Tampa by 3. I mean, that win at Detroit's a pretty significant win. Although Detroit was very banged up last year.
See, there's a team to me too that I think as good as they've been. I think that there is so much to prove this year, losing both coordinators, that I'm not going to be shocked if they take a step back just because of the fact that we just got done talking about how important it is and how long it takes to like settle in with a new OC and the new playbook and all that. I get it. They kind of went from within, so you're going to run the similar system and all that. I'm going to watch them very curiously to see how they do without both their coordinators.
They were 7-5 last year. And look, and Daniels was hurt like right around that time. But then they beat Tennessee, ho hum. They won at New Orleans by one, ho hum. They beat Philly at home, which that's a significant win. They beat Atlanta in overtime, ho hum. They beat the Cowboys, ho hum. Now their playoff, I mean, winning at Tampa in the playoffs is you know, that's significant. And then they won at Detroit, which is also significant. But the Lions were banged up, and then they got destroyed by Philly. Like I'm not a believer in them. I'm not a believer in them. We'll see how it goes. All right, 713-780 ESPN. What's the Rockets' biggest mistake since 2020? What do you think it is? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Summer Circuit continues this week. Join ESPN Houston every week as we visit different spots all over the greater Houston area. Each week, you can register to win our grand prize of the summer. A pair of brand new e-bikes from Power On Electric Bicycle Company. It's a $4,000 value for registration. Stop by the promo table. Say hello. They'll guide you in the right way. This week we'll be at the Cadillac Bar on Shepherd. So come out, join us this Thursday, noon to 6 at Cadillac Bar. You can find the entire summer circuit at ESPN975.com. Texter saying, hey, check the news. Lance McCullers is headed to the IL. Yeah, we did. We mentioned that 30 minutes ago, Israel. Lance is going on the IL. Do you think it's a real injury? 713-780-3776.
That's the better question, actually.
I trust him. Maybe it's foolish of me to trust the Astros. He did pitch Saturday. So, like, why did it take 3 days for that blister to flare up?
Look, Jeremy, there's been enough conspiracy throughout the year, but I would say that based on what all the outpouring of reaction after his last start, there might be a blister on his ego, but I just think that I'm more likely to believe that there's no blister this time.
3 days for the blister to flare up.
Yeah,
on Saturday.
I'm more likely leaning towards, well, just like the toe in the weight room, only this one's not as legit. I'm going to give him some time off.
Yeah, it's fine. No one's mad about this one. The Rockets signed a player today. Looked like the veteran minimum. I don't know how much of it's guaranteed. Josh Okogie.
I saw fully guaranteed.
Did you? I hadn't seen either way, so I didn't know. But it is the league. It is the veteran minimum, which they could have. That's the reason they released that dude the other
day.
That's right. So they could fit in one more veteran salary. So what do you think of this move? Where do you think he fits in?
Solidifying and backing up what Rafael Stone said when he said that we're not in the business of what was the term that he used about
development.
We're not in development anymore. This is exactly what it means. It means that once you go out and you make a move for Kevin Durant for a small window of time, that the days of developing and seeing what you can possibly get out of young players is over. This is about Ime Udoka, when we heard about the phases that he and Rafael and Tillman were talking about, this is clearly taking the step to the next phase. Whether you call it phase two or phase three, this is the difference between seeing how many young guys you can get on your roster and then, you know, figuring out which of those guys can contribute to, we're done screwing around. We're going to get guys that are dogs. We're going to get guys that do exactly what the coaching staff wants them to do. And we are going to do everything in our power to have this team make that push. And I like it. I like the fact that at a certain point you have to draw the line in the sand and say, okay, yeah, there was a time when we were stockpiling young talent, but we've seen Oklahoma City do it. And obviously finding a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander helps a whole hell of a lot. But whether he was there or not, at a certain point, they went out and gave Hartenstein $27 million a year. They went out and started to turn the page from just getting the young guys and going to the good guys. And whether you're good for 3 and 4 minutes at a time or you're a guy that gives them 15 points or more, this is what the Rockets are doing, and I like it.
Yeah, I don't think he's a rotation guy. I think he's a depth piece, and then if there's an injury to the rotation, he can just naturally fit in. Like, I don't expect him, if everybody's healthy, to be in the Rockets rotation.
Here's a guy that gives you the insurance policy for your new wing.
Yep.
This is a guy that gives you the if Doe isn't able to go, then you go and get yourself an Okogie. But remember now, Okogie was the Harden stopper for a while.
Yeah, oh, he can defend.
He can defend his ass off. And I think that whether in small doses or against certain matchups, you're going to take a guy that is on the floor just to get after people. The way that Dylan Brooks could do for longer stretches of time, the way that Pat Beverly used to do. Here's a guy that you put out there in exactly what Udoka wants. In the mold of like a poor man's Marcus Smart type guy, yeah. Where at any point I can say, that guy right there scoring too much, go get him. And I trust that Okogie's going to get hard fouls on him, if nothing else, but he's going to defend him. Yeah. And it's a depth piece behind Finney Smith that gives you more NBA veteran players that your coach can choose from on a night-by-night basis.
Yeah. Do you think he's a rotation guy?
No. Right off the top, no, because they have too much talent on this team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So ESPN did this thing where they listed every NBA team's biggest mistakes since 2020. For the Rockets, they had drafting Jalen Green over Evan Mobley. Do you agree with that?
I don't, and I don't simply because of the fact that Jalen Green ended up getting you Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
I think that this is a league that is now dictated by wing players and guards, and I think Evan Mobley is a really good player. Mm-hmm. But Evan Mobley is not the kind of guy that had the flash and the regular seasons that Jalen Green did, from the standpoint of it got you a Kevin Durant, and I can't criticize that move. I think, to me, when I was thinking about this, the initial thought for me was not finding a way to make it work between Harden and Paul, and then forcing yourself to try Westbrook. But that was 2019.
So just before.
Yeah, so it was a year before. So for me, just trying to think and decipher what other things could be an option, I think it's a lot of the swing and misses on the first-round picks. I get it, they were later in the first round in some cases, but if you could have gotten at least one of those guys right or two, could it made a difference instead of Ty Washington, instead of Garuba, instead of Josh Christopher, instead of the guys that you just completely swung and missed on and then ended up giving away?
Yeah. See, my two, I agree with you on the Jalen Green take. Like, you got Durant out of that. You netted Durant. Like, I'm okay drafting Jalen Green over Mobley if it gets me even an aging Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. For me, it's two picks. There's actually two that I have that come to mind. Two picks in the 2021 NBA draft, and you mentioned both of them. Garuba, the 23rd pick. Josh Christopher, the 24th pick. Do you know who went number 25?
You're going to go Coug.
Quentin Grimes, yep, went number 25. Give me Quentin Grimes in Houston. I hate that Rafael Stone took a Garuba and a Christopher over Quentin Grimes. One more. Last year's NBA draft. Remember they traded their second-round pick for A.J. Griffin, and then A.J. Griffin retired?
Oh, you and I, yeah, it's another Coug. I know.
Then that pick turned into Jamal Shedd. You could have had Grimes instead of Garuba and Christopher. You could have had Shedd instead of the retired A.J. Griffin. That's the two swing and misses for Rafael Stone since 2000.
And here's the thing. Coug. It's not being a homer, but there's nothing wrong with it.
Oh, it's definitely being a homer. But I think it is
from your
fair,
standpoint,
though.
Maybe it is. But from a basketball perspective, you think about it across the league. You think about it across all leagues, including Major League Baseball. When you're drafting and you draft a local kid, there's more leeway for even if you swing and miss, the fans appreciate it. And you're supposed to have seen this player more often anyway, so people respect the fact that, you know, that's a guy that you went and got. And both guys would have been perfect fits here, yeah, to give you exactly what we just got done talking about. What's Okogie going to give you? Well, at least from the standpoint of Shedd, you're going to get a guy that can do exactly that from a guard position.
And he can handle the ball a bit.
Yes, Okogie he can handle the ball, but he can go up, get in your grill, go pick, yeah, you up three quarters court, make smart decisions on the basketball court. And Grimes, what have we been missing? Guys that can knock the ball, shoot the ball in the basket. Freaking Grimes can make jump shots.
And he can defend a bit and get rebound a bit, too. Yeah. I mean, Christopher Garuba over Grimes and then trading a pick for A.J. Griffin, who retired before even the draft. Oh, man. Those are my two. Israel says drafting Ruth Shepard. You knew he would, though. All right. 713-780-ESPN. What's your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
You prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Car wrecks of the day, 713-780-ESPN-HRV. Listener line, 713-780-3776. Car wrecks of the day. Blankers, what you got?
First one, Chaz McCormick thinking that there were two outs when he caught that ball diving in. Brain fart. I know that P. Randizzle was tweeting us and getting into how severe of a violation it was. Well, you know, runs didn't score and bases weren't taken, but at the same time, it was pretty boneheaded.
Yeah, it was. It was. It didn't impact the game at all. Like, the run would have scored.
Right.
But he's gonna get rest. Like, he's gonna hear about that. If they do kangaroo court still, he's gonna have to pay a few hundred bucks into the team coffers. That way they can have a nice steak dinner or something at his expense. Now, that was embarrassing, but at the same time, I was not in the least bit surprised that Chaz McCormick did that.
Yeah, and the other one that I got is Jerry Jones, the owner and general manager of the Dallas Cowboys, completely dragging, one, your star quarterback that you just gave $60 million a year to, and Micah Parsons, who still isn't signed to an extension yet, and you aren't helping negotiations any by dragging him like this.
Yeah.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt six games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out two-thirds of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
There you go.
My man, he's going full-blown senile by the end of the year.
Yeah, I think he's there. His son's not much better either.
No, he's not.
He's not senile, but he's got like the same kind of like.
It's kind of like the ho hum, okie dokie, it'll be okay. Yeah, because I heard the interview with Steven recently, too, and I'm going, boy. Wasn't it on like Schottenheimer and things?
The one that I listened to was like a couple years ago. Oh, it wasn't recent for me.
I saw one recent where they caught him in a ball cap and started asking him about Schottenheimer and everything like that, and he was selling Schottenheimer like he was Belichick, and I'm like, nope. No one's believing that.
He does a weekly hit with whoever their flagship is in Dallas. Stephen Jones does.
Okay.
They both do. But it's weird. Stephen Jones, you know, does a weekly hit with the Dallas TV there. Like, could you imagine Jim Crane doing a weekly hit? Could you imagine Tillman doing a weekly hit? Could you imagine Cal McNair
doing a
weekly
hit? But that's like Patrick doing the weekly hit. Like, Tillman, still hard to believe, but, like, your son is doing the weekly hit, and you have your weekly hit.
You're right. That is a better comp. He doesn't do that, right?
Right, no.
Yeah, I remember I listened to one of those weekly hits one time. I don't remember why. Maybe it was the week they were playing the Texans, and I was just listening to, like, opposing radio because I do that sometimes. It might have been that.
I remember why. Because that was the one where he lost his bleeping mind on the two radio guys for, like, pushing back on him.
Steven did? I thought it was Jerry.
Oh, no, Jerry did. I thought you were talking about you listened to Jerry one week.
No. I heard that one with Jerry. But yeah. I think I'm pretty sure when the Texans last played the Cowboys – I was listening to, like, you know, all the Dallas audio to, like, pick up on stuff. And it's the first time that I heard Stephen Jones, like, long form, like 10, 15 minutes. And I was like, ooh. I don't know how I feel about this. Because I used to be of the belief that, like, hey, once Jerry moves on, Stephen takes over, it'll be better for Dallas. And then after listening to that 10, 15 minutes, I was like, nope, it's going to stay the same.
Let me guess. Better. He doesn't hold back. He says whatever is on his mind.
It was a little bit of that, but it was more like, this guy doesn't know ball.
It's more like rah-rah and pump
it's
up
more
what
like,
you got.
It's more like he shouldn't have zero control of the roster, and he has all control of the roster. It's kind of like Jerry,
like,
but not
Cal,
the senile
with total
craziness.
Control.
Yeah, but he also doesn't have character, Stephen Jones. Like, Cal's got a little, like, I don't know if I want to call it charisma, but he's got a little character, Cal McNair does. Jerry has a little bit of character, charisma, senileness that's entertaining. Mm-hmm. Stephen Jones is like boring Jerry Jones. Like, he's dumb, but he's boring.
Yep.
He doesn't even give us a good soundbite. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he reminded me of. My car wrecks this umpire who tossed Justin Verlander. Not that he tossed Justin Verlander, but what he said to Justin Verlander as he tossed him. Worry about getting out of the third inning. You don't treat a Hall of Famer that way. An umpire shouldn't be talking to players like that. you want to, you know, go back at him, you want to curse at him, like, okay, that's fine. But you don't talk about a bad performance the night before. That was bush league by that umpire. He should be reprimanded.
I don't disagree with you simply because of the fact that it's one thing that if a manager's coming at you 100 miles an hour that you have the ability to, like, stick up for yourself. But the fact that you're going and turning it and, like, trying to drag, it doesn't matter if it's Justin Verlander, it's anybody. It's like, keep it between the lines. Talk about the zone or something like that or what you saw or didn't see. But don't take the personal shot.
Yeah, I thought that was ridiculous, especially if they umpired to player dynamic. It's not, like, a rookie would be another thing. Like, you want to say that to a rookie? Okay, like, it's still not cool, but it's a little bit better than a future Hall of Famer. You don't say that to 260 wins. Like, it's insane to me. Also, did you see how the Red Sox lost yesterday? Extra innings.
I did.
Catcher's
interference.
Bases loaded. Yeah. Nobody out. Walk-off catcher's interference. I want to say I read it was, like, the first time it's happened in, like, the 90s and maybe the second time ever.
It's been a very long time.
Yeah. Josh from Seabrook, car wreck of the day, the Cincinnati Bengals front office. Both Trey Hendrickson and Shamar Stewart left them on red. Yeah, they got issues there. The Chazzy Fizz brain fart would get you benched in a Little League game. In a Little League game, yes.
Yep.
It would. Not everyone can have Hannah create cool cat cow. It's true. It's true. All right, what wins car wreck here?
I'm going to go Jerry Jones.
I like it. Jerry Jones, you're the winner. Car wreck of the day. Congratulations to Jerry Jones. Thanks to Ryan for the hard work. He's blank on Branham. Talk to you tomorrow. Good night, Houston.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.